Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. Back in 2008, we recorded a new recording of one of the lost series of I Love a Mystery by Carlton E. Morse. So here's episode 4 of Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge.
O'clock at night in Frozen Corpse Lodge, snowbound and stormbound, high in the mountains somewhere on the California-Nevada line. Frozen Corpse Lodge is the private hunting retreat of J. Irving Stark, and it was his daughter Gail, personal friend of Jerry Booker, who invited Jerry and Jack and Doc up here in the mountains for a weekend. They came in the guise of guests, but mainly they are here because of a strange terror, which is dogging Gail Stark's heels. The last three men she kissed died violently within 24 hours. Doc and Jack are to find out why. And there are other indications that all is not on the up and up. Right after a radio broadcast told of a manhunt in the vicinity of Reno, a man came to the door of the lodge, said he was lost in the snowstorm, that his name was A.J. Ben, and asked to spend the night. Then there is Jones, the new butler, who sticks to his story that an employment agency in Reno had orders to send him to the lodge. And Bruce Garrett, a very rich young man with dead black eyes and glossy black hair and milk-white skin, who is supposed to marry Gail, although she obviously dislikes him. Her dislike greatly increased when he made a slurring remark about Jerry Booker, and Doc knocked him unconscious. According to legend, each winter for the past 10 years, a frozen corpse has been found near J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge, and this winter is no exception. Pio, the caretaker, on his way from the stable to the lodge, has just announced that he has found the murdered body of a man frozen in a snowbank.
Now, when I turn over the body, I want each one to come forward and see whether you can identify it. Give me a hand, Doc.
Yeah.
There. I'm sorry to do this, but it's important. After you've looked at the face, go back in the trophy room and wait for me. Jerry, you first.
Hey, me?
Yes, everyone.
Okay, but I don't have to like it.
Ever see him before?
No.
Okay, Miss Stark, please.
Yes.
Well?
No, I've never seen him.
Okay, you girls go in by the fire and wait.
Yes, I'm cold.
Doc, how about you?
Never laid eyes on him, son.
Uh-huh. You go in with the girls and see if you can revive Bruce Garrett.
Huh. I don't care if that piece of smelly cheese never revives.
I want him to identify this body.
Oh, I get you.
Now, then, Mr. Stark, please.
This is a dreadful business, Packard.
Uh-huh. Know him?
No.
Ever seen him?
Never, to my knowledge.
Okay, go back inside. Oh, by the way.
Well?
Have you got some outbuilding, garage, woodshed, someplace where this body can be locked up until the authorities can get here?
Yes, there's a tool house at the back of the house with a Yale lock on it.
Good.
But how you're going to get to it without wading through new snow up to your armpits, I don't know.
Then we'll wade through the snow up to our armpits. Oh, and another thing.
Yes?
When you go in, turn on your radio and watch for a special announcement concerning a manhunt.
Manhunt?
Yes. Pay particular attention to any description given over the air.
You think...
I'm not thinking anything just yet. And finally, put in a phone call to the authorities in Reno.
Oh, they can't possibly get up here.
Well, they'll be informed anyway.
Oh, very well.
Attaboy. Y'all can make it.
Here's Doc Long with Bruce.
Y'all going right. Hell, he ain't very bright yet. He's awake.
Take your hand off my arm.
Sure, son. Only if I do, don't sag.
Clown.
Look at this man's face, Garrett, and tell me if you can identify him.
What?
Can you see his face clearly?
Well, yes, I
catch him, Doc!
Well, too fast for me. Imagine him collapsing right on top of the body.
Oh, my goodness sakes! Why you want to do such a silly thing like that, I wonder?
Maybe you seen something that made him kinda sick inside.
Well, he's out. Pio!
See?
Help Doc carry Mr. Garrett back into the house.
Okay.
Okay, Pio, old son. Grab a hold.
See? Mama Diablo, she is more heavy. This fellow than what I think.
Yeah. This way.
See? She must weigh 200 or 100 pounds, I bet you anything.
All right, Ben, come here.
Save me for last, I noticed.
Have a look.
Yes. Yes, just as I suspected.
What's that?
I said just as I expected.
Well, what did you expect?
That this man didn't die of frostbite.
You suspected that, did you?
Yes. The way his body lies indicates that he died violently, with his muscles tense, not relaxed in slumber, as one does who grows numb and freezes to death.
For a city man who knows nothing about the out-of-doors, you're very well informed, Mr. A.J. Ben. And by the way, is that your name?
A.J. Ben? Certainly.
Huh. Well, you haven't told me whether you can identify the body.
No.
No what?
No, I can't identify it.
I'm inclined to doubt that.
That's your privilege, of course.
And another thing. So far, you've succeeded in putting off the inevitable question.
What am I doing up here in these mountains?
Yes.
Yes, I have, haven't I?
You have what?
Succeeded in putting off the question.
Well, how about answering it now?
Packard, do you know what's happened?
What happened?
Yes, the telephone's been tampered with.
So, you can't reach outside?
Exactly. And more devilish than that, the tubes of every radio in the lodge have been smashed. Deliberately smashed.
Oh, interesting. How about it, Ben?
Yes, isn't it?
Interesting. Is that all you've got to say?
Please, let's finish one thing at a time.
But there must be a Stark raving maniac loose in the place. Why should anyone go about...
Look, Mr. Stark, just as soon as I finished with my attempt to identify this body, we'll go into that.
I don't see that that's important.
Perhaps you don't, but I do.
Have you gone through his clothes?
Yes, even the markings have been cut out of his coat.
But how can a man who's lost his way and frozen in the snow matter to anyone but the police?
He didn't lose his way and freeze.
What?
This man was stabbed in the back.
Stabbed?
So that's how it was done.
Between the shoulder blades.
Oh, this is the most ghastly... You're not just saying that for a purpose.
Maybe you'd like to see for yourself?
No.
Then you'll have to take my word for it.
Yes, by all means. By the way, Mansfield and that man Jones are waiting in the hall in case you want them to attempt an identification.
Yes, send them out. And what's become of Pio?
He's in the trophy room telling everyone how he found the body.
What's Doc thinking of? Anyway, go in and shut him up and send him out here.
Very well. And I'll send Mansfield and Jones out.
You take command very well, Packard.
Thanks for nothing.
What do you make of the sabotaged phone and radios?
Somebody outguessed me. Oh, come here, Mansfield.
Very good, sir. I also brought along this person at Mr. Stark's request. The name is Jones, and I'm the new butler. Preposterous. Utterly preposterous.
I'm the new butler.
Upstart. Upstart with a colossal gallbladder.
Let's hold all of that for a minute. You wait here, Jones.
Yes, sir.
Mansfield, come here. And take a look at this body.
Most distasteful. I might say vulgar.
Yeah, but have a look anyway. Never seen him before?
Never, sir. Never.
Uh-huh.
Most extraordinary expression on his face, if I may say so.
Yes?
Yes, as though all the fiends of hell were after him, sir.
Uh-huh. Oh, Pio, come here.
See? Senior Stark say you want to see me some more, no?
Yeah. Jones, go back in the hall and wait with Mansfield.
Sure.
Ben, you might as well go in and join the others in the trophy room. It's pretty cold out here.
I might be some help getting the body around to the tool room if you're going to lock it up.
Suit yourself. All right, Pio.
See?
Have you had a good look at this dead man?
Senor, Did I not find the body? Did I not, with my own hands, pick she up and carry her on my own shoulders through the snow to the portico here?
Yes, I know.
Well, for what in the world, you ask me, then do I have good look at this dead man, then?
I mean, have you had a good look at his face?
Son of a gun, mother diablo, of course I look at his face. Won't you think maybe I am, eh? A dumbbell?
Just answer my questions.
For good gracious sake, senor, if I cannot ask better questions than those, I don't ask no questions at all, I think. Of course I look at his face. How else am I going to know who she is if I don't look at her face? Maybe you'll tell me that, senor. Huh? I am no dumbbell. I tell you those, I betcha.
Do I gather from what you've just said that you looked at the dead man's face and know who he is?
No, I do not know who he is.
But you just said...
Senor, I do not say it. I have never said it. See, I look to see. See, I do not. But I do not know. I have never seen this hombre. I do not know him. I do not want to know him. I would not know him.
Pio!
See?
Stop that blithering idiocy and answer my questions.
Well, for... Mama Diablo. What a dumbbell.
Where did you find the body?
Where?
Yes, where?
He asked me where I find it.
Pio!
For golly's sake, senor, I bring in body frozen stiff, covered with ice and snow, and you ask me where I find it? Senor, I find her out in the snow. That's where I find it.
But where?
With snow coming down, it was dark so black, I do not see my own face in front of me, and with snow up to my hips. You ask me where?
Yes, I ask you where.
Senor, that is impossible to know.
All right, tell me this. What were you doing out in the snow?
But, senor, I am caretaker. I am guide in summer, and I am caretaker in winter.
I know that. But what were you doing out waiting around in the snow on a night like this?
But this is my job, senor. I bring in wood for the kitchen stove. I am mama, I am papa, to those horses down in the barn. I am most important man in all this mountain, I bet you.
And what were you doing when you discovered the body?
I am come from barn, where I had bed down horses for night against cold.
Then you found the body somewhere between the barn and the lodge.
See?
Excuse me, but isn't it pretty cold standing out here on this porch?
I told you to go inside.
I was thinking of you. You're not too warmly dressed.
All right, we'll take the body and lock it up in the tool shed, and then we'll finish the session in front of the fire. Pio.
See?
You go ahead and break a path through the snow.
See?
Ben, you help me with the body.
All right, if you'll take the shoulders.
Jack, just a minute.
Jerry, what are you doing out here?
Well, there's something you need to know. Listen, Jack, Gail Stark didn't try to identify the body.
What?
Well, she was afraid to look. She had her eyes shut all the time.
Afraid of what?
I don't know.
Go tell Doc to bring her out here and hurry it up.
Well, okay.
Oh, for love of Mama Venus. That is most beautiful girl in whole world, I bet you.
What's happened, Packard?
Never mind. You know, Ben.
Oh, no, please. I don't want to look.
Oh, Miss Stark, it ain't that bad.
I mustn't. I mustn't look.
Well, here she is, Jack.
On the other hand, you must look, Miss Stark. It's important. Now, please, I'll hold a flashlight to sharpen the features, so all you'll have to do is take one glance. Please, now.
Yes.
Good. Now...
I knew it.
You know who he is?
The fourth one. I kissed him goodbye in Reno yesterday.
What's that?
Doggone. She kisses him, and in 24 hours, they die. The hard way.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton E. Morris. This was Book 25, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. Directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson.
Here's Episode 5 of Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge.
Thank you.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery. A new Carlton E. Morse adventure thriller, Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge. One o'clock in the morning, snowbound and stormbound in J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge, high in the Sierras, somewhere on the California-Nevada line. Jerry Booker, the snappiest private secretary in Hollywood, with her bosses Jack and Doc, are guests of Stark and his daughter, Gail. They came in the guise of guests, but mainly they are here because of a strange terror which is dogging Gail Stark's heels. The last three men she kissed died violently within 24 hours. Doc and Jack are to find out why, but none of the others at the lodge for the weekend know that. These include Gail's fiancé, Bruce Garrett, the ancient butler, Mansfield, P.O., the lodge's cook and caretaker, and two men who had no business being there at all. One of them was Jones, the new butler. He sticks to his story that an employment agency in Reno had orders to send him to the lodge. The second man is A.J. Benn, who walked in out of the night and said that he had become lost in the snowstorm and asked for lodging for the night. As the night progressed and the lodge became snowed in, desperate events began to transpire. The telephone and radios were smashed. Old Mansfield whispered to Jack that he had a story of murder to tell when they could be alone. Bruce Garrett made a slurring remark about Jerry Booker, and Doc knocked him unconscious. And finally, P.O., the caretaker, on his way from the stable to the lodge, found the murdered body of a man frozen in a snowbank. And Gail Stark recognized him as a friend whom she'd kissed goodbye in Reno less than 24 hours ago. The fourth man to receive her kiss of death. And now at 1 o'clock in the morning, Jack and Doc are putting the screws on the entire personnel, one by one, as Jerry sits with a shorthand book on an artistically crossed knee, jotting down notes.
Yeah, come on, Miss Stark. Right in the tap room, or whatever you call it.
Yes, of course.
Here's Gail Stark, Jack.
Okay. You better go back to the trophy room and keep the rest quiet.
Okay. Yell when you want the next one. Don't be long.
Hey, just what is this?
Please, be seated.
Well, yeah, sure, but all this hocus pocus. Jerry with her shorthand book and being herded around and...
Don't give it a thought, Gail. It's all in a day's work.
Well, yeah, but you came up here to protect me, not ask me questions, remember?
Sorry, we've got to ask questions to protect you. Jerry's notebook's just so Doc and I can study everyone's answers at our leisure.
Well, okay. But I'd a lot rather do my talking off the record.
Don't worry. This is off the record. You're my client, so what you have to say is just between you and me.
Oh, so no one else will know what goes down in Jerry's book?
Right.
Oh, well, swell. That's different.
Good. First, what's the name of the dead man P.O. found in the snow?
Philip Ogden.
And just a word, who is he and what is he?
He's a son of Arthur Jameson Ogden, the motion picture producer.
Upper crust, huh?
Yes. Money, position, everything to live for. He was in my social set in Hollywood.
The same set as the other three young men whom you kissed and who were killed?
Yes.
Uh-huh. How did you happen to kiss young Ogden goodbye in Reno yesterday?
Well, I was just saying goodbye, and I leaned over and gave him a kiss on the cheek. It wasn't anything.
Just casual, huh?
Yes, I wouldn't have remembered it at all, only...
Only what? You getting all this, Jerry?
Oh, sure.
Well, only the minute I did it, I remembered the other three, and a horrible chill crept up my spine.
Uh-huh. You, knew you'd sealed his fate?
Of course not. How could I know anything like that?
But you said...
I only meant the terrible thing that had happened to the other three. Couldn't help wondering if I'd wished the same fate on Philip.
Well, apparently you had.
Yes.
Do you think there is somebody close to you who is resenting these young men?
Well, he doesn't love them, I should imagine.
Somebody close to you.
What? Oh, you mean Bruce Garrett?
Or your father?
Are you suggesting that Bruce or Father is responsible for four murders?
No, I'm asking you.
Well, naturally, my father's out.
Why naturally?
Just because he is. Because it's too absurd to even consider. Because
what?
Because he's a fine man and I won't even think about such a thing in connection with him.
Hey, Gail, don't be a fool.
What?
Well, tell him the truth about yourself and J. Irving Stark.
You know?
Of course I do, and so does everyone else.
I suppose so.
What are you talking about?
Well, J. Irving isn't really my father.
Oh?
My mother married him when I was a little girl.
Stepdaughter, huh?
Yes.
Does that make any difference?
I don't see how. I don't even know why Jerry thought it was necessary to bring it out.
Look, Jack, if that's all Gail's going to say, I'm going to put in my 2 cents worth. Maybe it doesn't mean anything, and maybe it does.
Well, go ahead.
Gail's mother married J. Irving years ago, yeah. But when she married, she put Gail in a girls' school and kept her there, except for a vacation now and then.
Jerry, I think that's horrible of you.
Why?
Well, Gail's ma had the idea that her life with J. Irving would be snugger if there wasn't a pretty growing girl around the house for her husband to see.
Is that true, Miss Stark?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Gail's ma died about a year ago, and J. Irving immediately brought Gail back into the house as his daughter.
Well, all through the years he used to come and see me when Mother didn't know. When I was little, he brought me candy and flowers, and when I was older, he sent me books and theater tickets and slipped me extra money for good times.
All this without your mother's knowledge?
Yes, he's always been so kind and generous and... Well, the only real parent I ever had.
Do you think he's in love with you?
As a father who's seen me grow up from a little girl, yes, very much so. Just as I'd love and honor him as my father.
Uh-huh. Then you don't think he could possibly be doing all this as a jealous older man determined to keep young men your own age away?
No, of course not. It's unthinkable.
Uh-huh. And now what about Bruce Garrett?
I can't conceive of anyone committing a murder, so naturally I can't believe it of Bruce.
But you don't like him.
I'm engaged to marry him.
Which makes your dislike all the stranger. Why?
Why am I going to marry him? Because I promised in a moment of weakness, and I pride myself in keeping my promises.
No, I meant, why do you dislike him so much?
Because I think he's the most egotistical, self-centered man I ever met with a streak of unutterable cruelty running through him.
And you don't think that's enough to justify you in breaking off the engagement?
No. Well, at least not just yet.
I don't follow you. I mean, what do you mean?
Just no.
But you said...
I said no, didn't I? That's all there is. Just no.
Uh-huh. His having more millions than he knows what to do with wouldn't have anything to do with your sticking to him, would it?
That's unutterably crude, Mr. Packard.
I know. But answer the question just the same.
I happen to be independently wealthy in my own right, if you must know.
From your mother or your stepfather?
No, J. Irving is...
Yes?
Nothing.
All right. Now, one thing more about the dead man, Ogden. What was he doing in Reno?
I don't know.
Didn't you ask him?
No, he's always around someplace. You know, the Playboy type. One weekend in Reno, the next in Palm Springs, and the next on Broadway. And...
I see. I think you'd better go to bed, Miss Stark. You look all in.
You mean you're through?
Yes. Will you ask your father to come in and, as you go out?
Yes, of course.
Oh, and Miss Stark.
Yes?
You'll please not discuss our talk with anyone.
No, of course not.
Jack, I just thought of something.
Yes?
Well, why didn't J. Irving identify the body if he was a close friend of Gail?
Good girl. His answer might be very interesting. Oh, come in, Mr. Stark.
Yes, certainly. Shall I close the door?
If you will. Sit right here, please.
Certainly. I see they have the sharpest secretary in Hollywood busy tonight.
That's right, up to my armpits in shorthand characters.
So this is how a murder investigation is conducted?
This is our method. Mr. Stark, Why did you tell us you didn't know the dead man?
Because I don't.
You want to stick to that, do you?
I most certainly want to stick to the truth as I know it.
So you maintain you don't know and never heard of Philip Ogden?
Philip Ogden? No, I don't know any Philip Ogden.
Isn't that a little queer, considering that he's been a member of your daughter's social set since she was a debutante?
He was?
Wouldn't you know?
No, I wouldn't know.
Well, I repeat, isn't it a little odd?
But you see, I...
Well?
Well, as a matter of fact, the relationship between my daughter, that is, between Gail and myself, isn't exactly what it appears on the surface.
How do you mean?
Well, she isn't my daughter, actually. I mean, she's my stepdaughter. Until a year ago, when her mother died, she was raised away from me at girls' schools and later at a resident college.
But why?
Her mother was, well, to put it bluntly, her mother was jealous of her.
Uh-huh.
So you can see, Gail has had the opportunity of forming numerous friends, many of whom I've never met.
That's all down, Jerry?
Every word.
But why are you taking down my words?
Doesn't mean anything. Just our method of checking each person's story against the others.
Sure, Jay Irving, relax. Cigarette?
Thank you, Jerry.
Sure. We're among friends.
Mr. Stark, did Gail tell you that she kissed this boy goodbye in Reno yesterday?
What? What did you say?
Yes. And 24 hours later, he's dead. Just as those three other young men.
What? What are you talking about? What about those three others?
You knew that three friends of Gail's had, on three separate occasions, entered liquor stores 15 minutes after midnight with guns in their hands, had said, "This is a stick-up," and had been shot to death by police shotgun squads for resisting arrest?
Yes.
You knew that?
Yes.
In each case, the young man to die that night had told her he was going away, and she had kissed him goodbye.
Just as she'd done the Ogden boy in Reno.
Mm-hmm. Just as she'd done the Ogden boy in Reno. Well, what about it, Stark? How do you think these four young men came to their deaths?
This is fantastic.
Did you know the first three?
I knew one of them. The other two I knew by name.
Do you think they were part of a gang of criminals?
It seems incredible.
What about their families? Haven't they demanded any investigation?
They've been so heartsick, all they wanted to do was crawl into their holes and die.
Uh-huh. Well, tell me, Stark. Do you think the kisses your stepdaughter has given these men have anything to do with their murders?
It seems incredible. There must be coincidence.
Well, what are your feelings toward Gail?
What? What are you saying? What are you implying?
Answer me. Are you in love with that girl?
What kind of a person do you think I am? I've watched over her since she was a tiny girl. I have given her my name and I have honored her with my home. I think what you are suggesting is just about the foulest implication one person could make to another. You'll excuse me, please.
One more question.
Not another word. You have taken advantage of my hospitality. I would be within my rights to put you out, snowstorm or no snowstorm. First murder and now this. I am going to my bedroom. Mansfield will take care of your needs.
Oh, boy. Did you step into something up to your armpits?
Looks like it, doesn't it? You got it all down?
Yeah, I got it. But he had me scratching like a chicken there at the end.
I rubbed him the wrong way, no doubt. Yes?
Hi. What the heck did you folks do to Mr. Stark? Man, he stopped off to bed looking like a feller that ate too many green apples.
Doc, you're supposed to be watching the people in the trophy room.
Yeah, well, Mr. Stark went up without saying anything, so I had to come up and see who you want to talk to next.
Sending Gail Stark's fiance. He's conscious, isn't he?
Bruce Garrett? Oh, sure, he's conscious, okay, but man, has he got a mean disposition.
Send him in.
Okay, you handle him with gloves. He's likely to be giving you hydrophobia, he's so mad. I'll go get him.
Collie Jack, do you realize it's 1:00?
Are you getting tired?
Who isn't?
Okay, there's only two more people I want to talk to tonight. The rest can wait.
Bruce Garrett and who else?
Mansfield.
The old butler? What can he offer?
You keep getting madder, sport, and you're going to blow up. Bust right in front of our eyes.
I'm going to do something you'll regret for the rest of your life if you take hold of me once more.
Here is, Jack, a frothin' and a foamin'.
Sit down, Garrett.
The little Gestapo, huh?
Go back and keep the rest herded together, Doc.
Okay, son.
Garrett, answer me something.
Depends.
Are you naturally as mean as you pretend, or are you putting on an act to cover up something?
Listen to the great analytical mind analyzing, the great detective detecting!
You hate detectives. Why should a man as wealthy as you hate anything as lowly and inoffensive as a private operator?
I'll tell you that if you'll tell me why you think I'm not as mean as I pretend.
Certainly. Gail Stark would never have got herself engaged to a man as continuously vicious as you have been since we arrived. More than that, every man has his violent moments, but no one, except madmen, stays in a state of overwrought emotion.
What did you say? Are you calling me a madman?
Pick up your chair and sit down.
How dare you call me mad? I'm as sane as anyone in this room. Madness? Ha! If you want madness, look elsewhere in this lodge of the frozen corpse.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton E. Morris. This was Book 25, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. Directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson.
And now, here we've got Episode 6 of Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery. One o'clock in the morning, snowbound and stormbound in J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge high in the Sierras, somewhere on the California-Nevada line. Jerry Booker, the snappiest private secretary in Hollywood, with her bosses Jack and Doc, are guests of Stark and his daughter Gail. They came in the guise of guests, but mainly they are here because of a strange terror which is dogging Gail Stark's heels. The last three men she kissed died violently within 24 hours. Doc and Jack are to find out why, but none of the others at the lodge for the weekend know that. These include Gail's fiancé, Bruce Garrett, the ancient butler, Mansfield, P.O., the lodge's cook and caretaker, and two men who had no business being there at all. One of them was Jones, the new butler. He sticks to his story that an employment agency in Reno had orders to send him to the lodge. The second man is A.J. Benn, who walked in out of the night and said he had become lost in the snowstorm. As the night progressed and the lodge is snowed in, the telephone and radios are smashed. Old Mansfield whispered to Jack that he had a story of murder to tell when they can be alone. Bruce Garrett made a slurring remark about Jerry Booker, and Doc knocked him unconscious. And finally, P.O., the caretaker, on his way from the stable to the lodge, found the murdered body of a man, frozen in a snowbank. And Gail Stark recognized him as Philip Ogden, a wealthy friend from her social group, whom she'd kissed goodbye in Reno less than 24 hours ago. The fourth man to receive her kiss of death. And now at 1 o'clock in the morning, Jack and Doc are putting the screws on the entire personnel, one by one, as Jerry sits with a shorthand book on an artistically crossed knee, jotting down notes.
Yeah, come on, Miss Stark. Right in the tap room, or whatever you call it.
Yes, of course.
Here's Gail Stark, Jack.
Okay. You better go back to the trophy room and keep the rest quiet.
Okay. Yell when you want the next one. Don't be long.
Hey, just what is this?
Please, be seated.
Well, yeah, sure, but all this hocus-pocus. Jerry with her shorthand book and being herded around and...
Don't give it a thought, Gail. It's all in a day's work.
Well, yeah, but you came up here to protect me, not ask me questions, remember?
Sorry, we've got to ask questions to protect you. Jerry's notebook's just so Doc and I can study everyone's answers at our leisure.
Well, okay. But I'd a lot rather do my talking off the record.
Don't worry. This is off the record. You're my client, so what you have to say is just between you and me.
Oh, so no one else will know what goes down in Jerry's book?
Right.
Oh, well, swell. That's different.
Good. First, what's the name of the dead man P.O. found in the snow?
Philip Ogden.
In just a word, who is he and what is he?
He's a son of Arthur Jameson Ogden, the motion picture producer.
Upper crust, huh?
Yes. Money, position, everything to live for. He was in my social set in Hollywood.
The same set as the other three young men whom you kissed and who were killed?
Yes.
Uh-huh. How did you happen to kiss young Ogden goodbye in Reno yesterday?
Well, I was just saying goodbye, and I leaned over and gave him a kiss on the cheek. It wasn't anything.
Just casual, huh?
Yes, I wouldn't have remembered it at all, only...
Only what? You getting all this, Jerry?
Oh, sure.
Well, only the minute I did it, I remembered the other three, and a horrible chill crept up my spine.
Uh-huh. You, knew you'd sealed his fate?
Of course not. How could I know anything like that?
But you said...
I only meant the terrible thing that had happened to the other three. Couldn't help wondering if I'd wished the same fate on Philip.
Well, apparently you had.
Yes.
Do you think there is somebody close to you who is resenting these young men?
Well, he doesn't love them, I should imagine.
Somebody close to you.
What? Oh, you mean Bruce Garrett?
Or your father?
Are you suggesting that Bruce or father is responsible for four murders?
No, I'm asking you.
Well, naturally, my father's out.
Why naturally?
Just because he is. Because it's too absurd to even consider. Because
what?
Because he's a fine man and I won't even think about such a thing in connection with him.
Hey, Gail, don't be a fool.
What?
Well, tell him the truth about yourself and J. Irving Stark.
You know?
Of course I do, and so does everyone else.
I suppose so.
What are you talking about?
Well, J. Irving isn't really my father.
Oh?
My mother married him when I was a little girl.
Stepdaughter, huh?
Yes.
Does that make any difference?
I don't see how. I don't even know why Jerry thought it was necessary to bring it out.
Look, Jack, if that's all Gail's going to say, I'm going to put in my 2 cents worth. Maybe it doesn't mean anything, and maybe it does.
Well, go ahead.
Gail's mother married J. Irving years ago, yeah. But when she married, she put Gail in a girls' school and kept her there, except for a vacation now and then.
Jerry, I think that's horrible of you.
Why?
Well, Gail's ma had the idea that her life with J. Irving would be snugger if there wasn't a pretty growing girl around the house for her husband to see.
Is that true, Miss Stark?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Gail's ma died about a year ago, and J. Irving immediately brought Gail back into the house as his daughter.
Well, all through the years he used to come and see me when Mother didn't know. When I was little, he brought me candy and flowers, and when I was older, he sent me books and theater tickets and slipped me extra money for good times.
All this without your mother's knowledge?
Yes, he's always been so kind and generous and... Well, the only real parent I ever had.
Do you think he's in love with you?
As a father who's seen me grow up from a little girl, yes, very much so. Just as I love and honor him as my father.
Uh-huh. Then you don't think he could possibly be doing all this as a jealous older man determined to keep young men your own age away?
No, of course not. It's unthinkable.
Uh-huh. And now what about Bruce Garrett?
I can't conceive of anyone committing a murder, so naturally I can't believe it of Bruce.
But you don't like him.
I'm engaged to marry him.
Which makes your dislike all the stranger. Why?
Why am I going to marry him? Because I promised in a moment of weakness, and I pride myself in keeping my promises.
No, I meant, why do you dislike him so much?
Because I think he's the most egotistical, self-centered man I ever met with a streak of unutterable cruelty running through him.
And you don't think that's enough to justify you in breaking off the engagement?
No. Well, at least not just yet.
I don't follow you. I mean, what do you mean?
Just no.
But you said...
I said no, didn't I? That's all there is. Just no.
Uh-huh. His having more millions than he knows what to do with wouldn't have anything to do with your sticking to him, would it?
That's unutterably crude, Mr. Packard.
I know. But answer the question just the same.
I happen to be independently wealthy in my own right, if you must know.
From your mother or your stepfather?
No, J. Irving is...
Yes?
Nothing.
All right. Now, one thing more about the dead man, Ogden. What was he doing in Reno?
I don't know.
Didn't you ask him?
No, he's always around someplace. You know, the Playboy type, one weekend in Reno, the next in Palm Springs, and the next on Broadway. And...
I see. I think you'd better go to bed, Miss Stark. You look all in.
You mean you're through?
Yes. Will you ask your father to come in and, as you go out?
Yes, of course.
Oh, and Miss Stark.
Yes?
You'll please not discuss our talk with anyone.
No, of course not.
Jack, I just thought of something.
Yes?
Well, why didn't Jay Irving identify the body if he was a close friend of Gale?
Good girl. His answer might be very interesting. Oh, come in, Mr. Stark.
Yes, certainly. Shall I close the door?
If you will.
And now we find Doc in the trophy room where he is presiding.
Oh, doggone. 1:30 in the morning.
Begging your pardon, sir, but it's getting late and I have a difficult day before me tomorrow.
Yeah, you are kind of an old codger to be up at this time in the morning, Mansfield.
Perhaps if I could retire then.
Sorry, you can sleep in tomorrow morning.
You feel obliged to keep me here?
Yep. Jack said everybody keeps herded together until he's had a chance to talk to you.
But Mama Diablo, if he talked to us so long as he talked Senorita Gale and Senor Stark, we would be here all night.
Well, don't rumple up your feathers at me, P.U. I ain't the one that's a-keeping you up.
Why'd you call me P.U.? Well, my name, she is P.O. Answer me that.
Okay, son, take it easy.
Well, for goodness sakes, I am P.O., the caretaker of Frozen Corpse Lodge. Yes? No?
Why, sure.
See, and caretaker must get out of bed 5:30, 6 o'clock a.m. in the morning. Is it not so?
Yeah, I wouldn't be one mite surprised.
So why? I am kept up with a lot of big foolish men to 3 or 2 o'clock. You ask me that.
Yeah, don't worry. Jack and Jerry ain't going to be in the bar long with Bruce Garrett, I don't think. Mr. Ben, what's the matter with you and Jones here? I ain't had a word out of neither of you for an hour.
I'm just relaxing before the fire.
Yeah, you sure do look comfortable, all right.
That utterly glorious feeling of peace that comes over one before the warmth of the hearth, while outside the elements are raging, the absolute helplessness of being snowbound, and there's nothing to do but relax and enjoy it.
Well, I'll be doggone, a dirt poet.
Huh? This feller?
You don't like poets, P.O.?
No, I don't like poet. And also, I don't like you, I betcha.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
Ha! Well, I'd care about you if you were sorry. You're the kind of fella I bet you will take bath every day.
P.O., my man.
See? The kind of fella that has toothbrush at home, eh?
Yes, I have a toothbrush.
Didn't I tell you? One of them high monkey muck fellas. One of them pretty teeth fellas.
Doggone, sport. You can get more indignant about more stuff than any hombre I've ever met. What's the matter with you, Jones?
I'm cold, that's what's the matter. Can't they even afford to keep the fires in this place?
Yeah. Is anybody else cold?
I don't care whether anybody else is cold or not. I am.
Okay, P.U., go get another stick of wood.
Well, for my goodness sake, at this time of night?
Cut out the indignant and go get it.
Since when are you or my boss?
See this fist?
No, senor.
Well, you better see it on account as I'm just as liable as not to run it down your throat clean up to the elbow.
You would not do this thing.
Then go get some more wood.
See? With pleasure, senor.
And hurry back.
See? In 1 minute, I am back.
We're most extraordinary.
What did you say, Mansfield?
What's that, sir?
You muttered something to yourself.
Did I indeed? Sir, a very bad habit. I must break myself of it. Most disagreeable, I'm sure.
Hey, here's an idea. As long as Jones is here and him being a butler, how about him pitching in and helping you, Mansfield?
2 butlers on 1 position, sir?
Well, you ain't getting no sleep tonight, and after all, Jones here is a younger man.
But much less capable, I assure you.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Much less capable.
I've helped my own with the best of them, Grandpa.
Jones, I must ask you, do not refer to me as Grandpa.
Did you ever buttle for Smith Abbott's?
I never did.
Yeah, well, how about these Cyril Wesley Finchos?
Never. For 35 years, I've been Mr. J. Irving Stark's butler. That, my man, is a record of service you will never live to equal.
Well, Mr. Stark must want to get rid of you for now.
That is a prevarication without equal.
Hey, Master, else why did he send for me?
He positively did not send for you.
Oh, that ain't the way I heard it, as the saying goes.
I refuse to quarrel with so low a person. Beg your pardon, Mr. Ben. Is there something wrong?
What? Oh, it's just that one of the globes is out in this floor lamp. I was unscrewing it to see whether it was burned out or whether there was a bad connection.
Yeah, are y'all an electrician?
Oh, I've puttered around it. Hello?
Hey, all the lights went out. Mr. Ben, did you monkey around and blow out a fuse?
No, I didn't even have my hands on the lamp when the lights went off.
Mansfield, y'all know where the fuse box is?
Quite so, sir. If you'll sit quietly, I'll go put another in place. It will take but a second, I'm sure.
Well, if this ain't a mess.
Hey, Doc, what's going on?
Ah, Jerry. Lights have gone out.
Well, I say they've gone. Blacker than the inside of a cat.
Come on in the trophy room. There's a little light from the fireplace. Where's Jack?
I'm coming, too.
Can you find your way?
Oh, sure. Once we got a line on the fireplace... Ouch! Oh, my poor ankle.
You better sit down right here where you are.
Yeah, it'll be only be another minute. Mansfield's gone to put in another plug. Where's Bruce Garrett?
I let him go up to bed just before the lights went out. Jerry and I were checking our notes.
What the heck do you suppose happened? To the lights, I mean.
Oh, it was Mr. A.J. Ben here. He was a monkeying with the floor lamp, and Mansfield said it'd take him just a minute to fix it.
Is everyone else here?
Sure, except Flo.
Flo? Oh, P.O.
Yeah, I'll send him out for some more wood. Hey, he's taking a heck of a time at that.
The wood supply is in a shed in the back of the lodge. It would take him quite a while.
Is that you, Jones?
Oh, that's right, mister.
Hello? Hello, everybody.
Oh, there's P.O.
What's the matter with the lights?
Can you find your way, P.O.?
So I find my way. I know this place like a mama. But what I do not know is what happened to the lights.
We blew a fuse.
Put those logs on the fire. Maybe they'll give us enough light to see comfortably.
See? I have bring some green branches. That would make the big light. See, like this.
Wonderful.
Hey, where's Ben?
What's that?
Ben ain't here. He's sitting right over yonder.
And you say he was tampering with the light?
He blew the fuse sure as I'm a foot high.
Doc, you and Jerry stay here with Jones. Pio, you're coming with me.
I am?
Yes, you're going to show me where Mansfield went to change the fuses.
Mansfield? But in 1 minute, he will have the lights on.
Don't argue. Have you a candle or a flashlight or something?
See, here on mantel is kerosene lantern.
Good. Doc.
Yeah?
You and Jerry keep an eye on the stairs. Don't let anyone go up or down until I get back.
It's as good as done, fella.
Sure, Jack.
All right. Bring your lantern. And come with me, P.O.
See? I will lead the way.
Now, where is the fuse box?
We go through this way into kitchen. And then down stairway into basement.
Kitchen?
See, la cocina. This is the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
This door is door to basement.
All right, let's go down.
See? Señor! Señor, look!
A body. Come on!
See? A body.
Hold it.
It is Mansfield, no?
Hold that lantern down here. No, it's Ben.
Señor AJ, Ben?
Yeah.
Oh, what a nasty blow.
He's come to, eh?
I can't find any bump or abrasion. Where were you hit?
Oh, what a nasty hit. Somewhere behind the ear, I think.
Here, what's this?
Señor, that is fuse plug that make lights go out.
What were you doing with a fuse plug, Ben?
A fuse plug?
Yes, a slightly used fuse plug.
Please, I can't think straight.
P.O., can you take these matches and go on down and put in a new plug?
Oh, see.
Here, take this plug. See if it works.
Si, señor, it's very minute.
Just what goes on here, Ben? Monkey with the lamp upstairs until you blow a fuse, slip away in the dark, and then pretend to have been knocked out?
But believe me, it's no pretense.
There's not a sign of a mark on you. What's this
fuse plug business?
I tell you, I don't know anything about fuse plugs.
Then why did you come down here?
I thought Mansfield might be in danger.
Mansfield? Why?
I just did.
Danger from what?
I don't know.
That's pretty thin. Did you see Mansfield?
No, I just got down here to this first landing when something hit me from behind.
But if Mansfield... Ah, the lights.
There is light, senor.
Good work, Pio. Any sign of Mansfield down there?
No, senor. Mansfield, she's not here.
Come on back up.
See? First fuse I unscrew, she is one.
You use the fuse you found here?
See, she is good.
Uh-huh. Can you stand, Ben?
I think so.
Give him a hand, Pio.
See? Now, up with you, senor.
Thanks.
All right, let's go. I'll bring the lantern. I left the door open. Go right in through the kitchen. Right into the trophy room. This way.
Hey, Jack. Is that you?
Yeah. Has Mansfield come back?
Heck no. Didn't you find him up at the fuse box? Hey, what's the matter with Mr. Ben?
Slugged, he says.
He does look kind of green around the gills.
Oh, that's a doggone shame. Here, sit before you fall.
Thank you.
Anybody go up on the second floor or come down?
Nary a soul.
Okay, Doc. You stay here with Pio and Ben and Jones. I'm taking Jerry upstairs with me.
Well, what's that for?
What do you think? Can't you get it through your head that Mansfield's missing?
Oh, yeah, but...
Never mind. Just keep these three men right in this room together until we get back. Come on, Jerry!
Okay. What do we do? Ransack the bedrooms?
Well, take it easy on the stairs. You know which rooms belong to who, don't you?
Yeah, sure.
When you get at the head of the stairs, I want you to take me to Gail Stark's room. Don't talk any more than you have to.
Yeah, okay. This way. Here. This one.
Uh-huh.
You're gonna go right in without knocking?
Yes, that's why I wanted you along.
Golly.
I'm not going to make a sound opening the door. Now, here we go.
And this'll teach you to bring private detectives around me.
Bruce, you're choking me. Stop it.
Hey, you big ape.
Okay, so it's the snoopers.
Gail, honey, are you all right?
Get out of this room.
Yes, we seem to be interrupting something.
Well, then get out.
It wasn't a little exercise in murder, was it? Thought I saw you with Miss Stark flat on the bed with your knee in the pit of her stomach, choking and shaking her. What about it, Gail?
I'm letting go. It's what I get for getting myself engaged to a jealous maniac.
Maniac! This is the second time I've been called that tonight.
Well, there's one thing, sport. If it was you in here making Miss Stark's teeth rattle, y'all couldn't have nothing to do with making Mansfield disappear.
Did you say Mansfield?
He disappeared?
Yes. You got any ideas?
No. Of course not. Huh. Or maybe I have. Perhaps we're going to have a use for the new butler after all.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton E. Morris. This was Book 25, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. Directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Renaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joy Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Pio, Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield, and Richard Haviland as Tuffy. Thanks also to Harry Thiel and Mike Wheeler. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Wilt. Music by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Ah, gee, that's all the time I've got for today. Please stop by ART's website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more of our podcasts. We put up a new one every month. Hey, thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.